Hey, Elliot.
Hey, Brian.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, in our final Zine Month special episode, we have two second edition projects from Adam Bell and Aaron Lim. Enjoy! Hello, and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today, we are talking with Adam Bell about his new project, Uneasy Lies the Head, Second Edition. Adam, welcome to the show. So good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're having so much fun with this Zine Month series. We did this last year and absolutely loved it. We're loving it again this year. It's so much fun to talk to people about so many cool games in such a short amount of time. We did three of these interviews yesterday, and now I'm buzzing about Zine Month.
Yeah, I was going to ask how many are you doing, because I imagine you can do up to infinite.
This is a seven recording week, I think. I think we're doing seven of our total eight all in this week.
It's a problem, because when we started this series, we got like 20 or 30 people submitted to, you know, be considered. And we were like, oh, we could, let's do them all, or let's do 20 of them. And then we kind of had to sit down and be like, all right, listen, we can't kill ourselves doing this. But we're very excited to talk about this game. So Adam, just to kick us off, can you give us the elevator pitch for Uneasy Lies the Head, second edition?
Yeah, Uneasy Lies the Head is a royal court. It's a GM-less competitive royal court role-playing game where everybody is going to create characters that are just important members of a royal court. And at the beginning of the game, you'll be basically drafting different character bits, including like titles and holdings and all this important stuff. So, and then your rankings on these three different tracks that I'm sure we'll talk about. So you could start the game, you'll learn that, hey, you'll decide, I'm going to be the monarch. Like my character, I want to play the monarch. But by choosing the monarch, you might lose out on choosing to be the character that is the most powerful person at the court. So it's sort of this, you start with this big web of things, and then you move on into the game proper, which is a lot like other sort of GM-less games where you'll be taking turns setting scenes, but you'll get the option at the end of any scene that you get to set to prepare a plan, which is sort of like a PBTA move that will evaluate in like five turns. The game will be mostly a matter of like experiencing the scenes, and then these plans get resolved later, and then reacting to that and bouncing back and forth between all that stuff.
For as much as I love court drama, I've never actually played it in a game, really. And I really want to. So fun.
If you want to play a game, I mean, one, I shouldn't come on here and talk about other games instead of mine, probably. But Play the King is Dead by the Bakers. It's like a hack of Firebrands.
Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's really good. Yeah.
it's just good.
So I'm curious, because this is, we're having another conversation later today, which always good to reference recording order on mic, about another game headed to second edition for Zine Month. So what's the taking this to second edition mean for you for bringing it to Zine Month?
Yeah, so the original version of this game exists. It's on my itch. I think it's free now. I released it in like 2020, and ever since I've had ideas on how to do it different, how to do it better. This is probably like the fourth second edition that I've started designing for this game, for Uneasy Lies the Head, and it's definitely the first one that stuck and kind of took form. So it's really a matter of taking an idea that I did ages ago that I was happy with, and I had a lot of fun every time I played it, but it was never exactly right. And so this just felt like a good time to just do it right and commit to it.
I'm curious, what was the core of Uneasy Lies the Head that you were very happy with, that you obviously wanted to make a second edition for, and what was falling short of your ideal of what that game could be?
So the only things that are the same, it's an entirely different game. It's probably foolish to call it second edition, but I like the title enough to stick with it. But the only things that are the same are like the core concept, like you're important nobles in a royal court. And then the dice mechanic is largely the same. And it's because the dice mechanic I like a lot because it is very, very interactive. The basics of it are when it's time to roll dice, if you're rolling a dice in the new version to resolve one of your plans, a difficulty will be set by either you get the choice of either pulling from those rankings that I referenced a little earlier. Like if you're top of the power track, doing a power plan is going to be a lot easier than if you're at the bottom. And then if you're not happy with that difficulty because it's too hard, you can call for like a player vote, because the only thing that stops these nobles from getting their plans done is really the interference of the other nobles. So if you call for a vote, you revert to the Uneasy Lies the Head first edition. All the rules were the vote, and it's really fun, but I don't want to do it every time because the difficulty is basically set to how many players don't want you to succeed. And then when you roll the dice, on top of people deciding they don't want you to succeed, everybody gets a chance to like spend their resources to also throw dice. And then you end up rolling them. And if you roll D6s and you see enough different numbers on the D6s that you rolled that are equal to or higher than the difficulty, then you'll succeed. But if other players roll dice to interfere, like their dice will cancel. So if you rolled a 1, a 2, and a 6, that's 3 different dice. Maybe your difficulty is 3, and that's great. But if one of your interferers rolled a 6, that cancels your 6. All of a sudden you failed, but you know exactly why you failed.
Because of that person. Yeah.
I also really like a dice mechanic that doesn't involve any math. It's just, let's look at the things and I can just
count them.
Yeah. I'm gangbusters at counting.
So good at counting.
But
that is a very fun idea of it. It feels very thematic, and everyone on the show knows I love a thematic mechanic. But I love having the people who don't want you to succeed roll, and then like anything similar. I love the idea of canceling things out. Like, because you can almost think of it as like, I made these 3 plans to make my plan work, and now someone else thought of that move as well, and it cancels it out or something.
Yeah, exactly. And in the first edition, you just had tokens that you spent. So you would spend like, I'll spend 3 tokens to get 3 dice. But with the new version, I got rid of the tokens and I've added, there's like this whole subsystem of note cards, and every asset that you have is a note card, and assets can be NPCs, so like extra characters that are like in your retinue. They could be your holdings, so like your castle, your artifacts, you know, a cool sword or a set of earrings or whatever, and then resources. And to get dice, you basically exhaust those. So like you're pulling on your like, oh, I need 3 dice. I'm using all 3 of these characters. Like these are the people that are helping me. Whereas then you could say, oh, I'm doing the resource of like, I have the public's, like the public's approval. That's a resource that I spent to get this die. And then that's the one that rolled the 6 that canceled your thing. So like immediately you have like all of this theme, hopefully pouring into these dice rolls.
I love a thematic mechanic. Cannot stress it enough. I'm a sucker for it.
What does a session of this game like look like? What are the kinds of court intrigue sort of scenarios that people will find themselves playing around with when it comes to this game?
Yeah, so the sessions, or at least the game itself, which this is a part that is going to definitely come from playtesting, is how long does any of this actually take to play? But the general flow of play once you're done with the prologue, everybody has their characters and their note card assets and all this stuff, is there's basically a calendar, and you step through the calendar. So the squares on the calendars aren't days. They're like narrative beats. I got to figure out a good word for that because I'm going to want to say day, but I don't want it to be like, yeah, this whole game takes place in a week, because that doesn't make any sense. But you step through the days, and if there are no plans being resolved on those days, then whoever's turn it is to set the next scene just sets a scene. And at the end of that scene, they can choose to prepare a plan. So if they choose like the spread rumors plan, and that is one that has a duration of, we'll say 4, in 4 squares on the calendar, they'll write like, oh, my spread rumors plan resolves. Like, Adam, spread rumors. And then you'll step to the next day on the... Not day. See what I mean? I need a word for it. But they'll go to the next square on the calendar. Again, if there's no plans, you resolve no events, you'll just do a scene. And so that means at the beginning of the game, it's all about like, we're setting seeds, we're getting to know these characters, but like the big stuff isn't happening yet. And then the plans will start resolving. We'll start chucking dice and doing all this stuff.
Because you're laying those out and then you'll encounter them later in the calendar.
Right.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, exactly. And so then there are a few events that you'll see, like just sort of random events just to spice things up, probably 3 or 4 throughout the calendar. But the very last square on the calendar is always going to be an event called the shakeup. And that is where It's basically like the end game, but it can be the end of a session. It's like the season finale, basically. You're going to do a lot of different things, including seeing if you have captured enough assets to claim different titles. So like if your character wanted to become the monarch and wasn't, if you've grabbed all of the things that the, or enough of the things that the player who is the monarch, like created during character creation, that are like, these are the source of my power. The throne, I have a note card that says the throne. If you've taken that, I have a note card that says, you know, the castle or the capital or whatever. If you've taken enough of that during the shakeup, you can say, I have everything I need to be the new king. And so I'm going to be. Yeah. And that's theoretically the end of the session.
I really like the calendar as like an overarching mechanic to this. Yeah, it's really fun. It's really, because I can see how that would play out of like having it on the table like a battle map. Like when you think about court intrigue, like, dates and times, that is the battlefield.
Right, yeah, the long arc of history.
I'm curious when, like, because competitive TTRPGs is something that is not unheard of, but, like, on the rarer side, you know, we always, like, people love to lean on words of, like, collaborative and like, you know, things like that in RPGs. But, like, when you do competitive, it can make some interesting things. How did you think about combining, like, this competitive gameplay style that I think is really typical of board games and then like into collaborative storytelling of RPGs? How do those kind of ideas play together?
Yeah. My brain is probably like 80% board games in terms of like where all the design ideas come from. So I think it was like an easy guess. Cause I also really like most of my games are very collaborative, very sit down and let's figure this stuff out together. But most of the games I play on any given day it's probably like a competitive board game.
I am seeing, for the listener, a bunch of board games, I believe, mounted to your wall behind you, like little board game mats.
Yeah, those are like old, very old board games, board game boards that I found in my grandma's attic and put them on my wall.
My wife is going to hate that I saw that because now I kind of want to just mount board games to my wall. It's going to be a mixed reaction whether or not she likes that. I'm sorry, please continue. No, I got distracted by a Monopoly board on the wall, and I was like, ooh, what a great idea.
But yeah, so the competitive part of it is, no, I find that really fun in RPGs. I know there are a few that are out there, like The King is Dead, the aforementioned. I mean, the Royal Court thing is going to be inherently competitive. I think the only way it's not is if it's something like A Court of Blades by a couple of Drakes, where you're not playing like the nobles, you're playing a retinue of people under the like employ of the nobles. And so that's sort of how that circumvents the competitive nature of it. But if you want to really do this head to head thing, you know, cutthroat, backstabbing, spreading rumors about each other, yeah, the competitive just makes sense. And there were versions of this, like I said, this is like the fourth or fifth second edition. There are versions with like an end game scoring, which, you know, maybe it comes back in like a supplement I put on Itch in a year or something like that. But yeah, it's just a lot of fun to go head to head.
And it's sort of like, I think sometimes things like betrayal are abstracted in a way where it's like me, the player, is not betraying you, the player. But it sounds like in this game, you get that experience of like, I'm going to fuck you over, like player to player fuck you over. And also it's going to do this interesting betrayal thing with my character.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, anytime you call for a vote for a dice roll, like, that's purely abstracted player shit.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Or anytime that you step up and say, no, I am going to interfere with that dice roll. It's technically, you know, it's meant to imply that your character is interfering in some way, but you didn't have to do that. You could just let it succeed.
It is really nice to have it be a little bit more abstracted and expected, though, because if you're doing a, you know, a D&D game and you're like, ooh, I'm going to backstab you, that can feel really bad because there's no mechanic in there. There's no section of the game that is like, hey, this is kind of an option, a thing you should do. Whereas this is like, anytime you want, you can come in with this mechanic that is designed to help you facilitate this emotion.
Right, and that's really important for like tone setting and setting the table at the beginning of a game. If you're, like you said, if you're playing D&D and somebody, one of the players is like, I want to do backstabbing, like, if you don't have a conversation about that at the beginning, that could really not land. But if you have a whole game that it's all about this, like, back and forth and fighting each other and doing it mechanically, hopefully that can eliminate some of the bleed.
I do think that is a important distinction too, because this is like a game of power struggle, which kind of implies a back and forth. Like, there's never just a backstab of I kill you and take all your stuff. Right. Like, that's probably it's not what the thing is going to be. It's more, you know, I ruined you slightly in this moment, and now you're looked down on by this person. Okay. And then it's back and forth. And it's that, you know, Game of Thrones, that Bridgerton thing of just like trying to get that slight one up on each other and hopefully advance your goals more than your opponent.
Yeah. And very specifically, I can talk about another mechanic in here. So like all of the note cards are, like I said, all the assets are on note cards, and that's how you get dice, but they're also all tied to things in the world. But most of the plans allow you or involve, if you succeed, you either taking, breaking, or making a note card. So to take one, obviously you just take it. Maybe you do a move that lets you, yeah, I'm going to take your, you got your son on a note card there. That's my ward. Like, I'm taking him to my castle. I'm the king. Like, you, of course you want this. This is good. Royal courtship, that's all insidious. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Making one, that's also obvious. You make a new thing. Like, oh, yeah, I have this new resource. I have this new character. I'm introducing new people to the court. But breaking is a very weird one because it's I think, where most of the drama is going to happen. Because when you break a note card, if you roll dice to this, like spread rumors, I keep coming back to that one. That is one where you break a character's note card. And depending on the magnitude of the roll, so how successful you are, you'll get to take that note card. And every note card will have like a handful of words written on it that are like the traits of that character or that castle or whatever. And so if I rolled to break your note card with like a magnitude of 2, I get to tear 2 of those words off of the note card.
Ooh. That's fun.
And then I hand it back to you. Like, here you go. Now you're no longer like seen as suave.
It's like that person still exists, but now they're changed. That's really good.
That's even worse than it getting taken. It's like, yeah. Oh, you've just diminished it. Oh, you've ruined it for everyone.
if something is taken, you could take it back. Exactly. Right, it'll be mostly the same.
If you break it enough, it's kind of like, well, now I don't even want it.
Right.
Oh, that's so good. That's so like court intrigue. It's just like the like one stately prince is now like, you know, reputation been knocked down, is like, you know, not seen as the most handsome in the land or whatever. Yeah, that's right. Great. That's really good. I really, really like that.
It again goes back to the theme and like the genre of like court intrigue of, I don't have to kill you, I just have to ruin you. Like, exactly, it, in some ways, that, as I said, it's worse. It feels worse.
Cool. So I want to transition into some of the like real logistics or details about the campaign. Like, where are you funding? When are you funding? And what can people kind of get when they support this game this scene month?
Yeah. So it'll be on Kickstarter. You can follow the page now. If you search for it, it should come up. But if you go to my itch page, I have it at the top there. So I'm currently, I've pushed it back a little bit. I think it'll be towards the end of February, I hope, because otherwise I've lied to you about being a Scene Month project. But I was hoping to have it text complete before I hit the go button. And January, it's been quite a month. So I didn't get
why,
all
did something
the
happen? Something happened? Sorry, I canceled my New York Times subscription. Should I be reading it again?
I didn't get all the writing done that I wanted to get done. So I'm currently aiming for end of the month, towards, you know, the latter days of Zine Month. But if you follow the page, you'll get a notification whenever it goes.
And what's the kind of game, printed game, gonna look like?
Yeah, unfortunately, this also pushed past. It's gonna be a book. It's gonna be a small book, which is not,
hey,
a zine.
Been there.
I know.
Hey,
yeah. When I committed to Zine Month, I said this is gonna be a zine. I'm gonna keep it light. But then all these cool ideas kept like piling into the game. Yeah. So it's gonna be a small book.
Nice.
Tale as old as time. Really.
That's I know it happens.
Yeah. It's good because we've now hit like the two sides of, or the two ends of the spectrum of Zine Month. Like, we talked to somebody who did an 8-page print at home fold out, and then we had to hit the I accidentally made a book perspective. Yeah. Because that's the full scope of the experience.
Yeah, so it'll be a bound book.
It'll be a bound book, about, I think, either 64 or 80 pages. I know that like, the when you print books, this is a message people. The prices usually level off at intervals of 16, so you may as well shoot for that. So it'll be either 64 or 80, probably 80 at this point, unless I take out all the cool, like, old art that I've been filling my drive up with. No, yeah,
probably not. If it's going to be 64 in a book, it might as well be 80 in a book.
Right, what's the difference at that point? The good news is I successfully stopped myself from turning this into, like, a board game, because that is that's what's happening with another one of my projects is and so I specifically wanted this, like, just let me make a zine, just let me make a book.
Well, 3E will be the board game. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
We haven't had that on the podcast yet. No one's come in and been like, I started to make a zine. Turns out I made a board game.
That's my ever-present danger, is accidentally making a board game. Because this, I haven't talked about it. We don't need to get into it super much. But, like, one of the core mechanisms for selecting plans is worker placement from board games. So, you can't spread rumors if somebody more esteemed than you in the game has already spread rumors this cycle. Anyway, that's a whole thing.
Love worker placement games.
Right.
And then what's your funding goal?
It should be a couple of thousand. It's currently in there as 3,000, because that should be enough to print it, handle, like, shipping stuff and handle any sort of extra costs. So about 3,000 is the current goal.
And then is this just you, or do you have a team that you'd like to shout out and talk about as well?
Currently, this one is just me.
Taking it all on. Well, you've got this great pub domain art aesthetic going that I think is I love the hero image. It's very, very good.
Yeah, that's a painting of one of the several defenestrations of Prague. Which is when in Prague, a couple of times throughout history, they just throw guys out windows.
Hell yeah.
Because
it's crazy that word exists.
Defenestration? It might be their fault.
It might be their fault. It might be.
It's a word that I feel like I know. And every time I think of defenestration, I'm like, defenestration of Prague. And I think until this moment, I didn't really know what that was. I just knew that it was an event in history.
So Adam, we're trying a new segment this year for our Zine Month series that we are confidently, super confidently calling A for Advice. And obviously, this is not your first project. Folks might know you from My Brain is a Stick of Butter or Grasping Nettles or some of the other games that you've already worked on. But what we are offering to the people who come on the show is there a problem you are facing this Zine Month that we can help talk out, guide you through based on all the Zine Month interviews we did last year, the Zine Month interviews we're doing this year, and, like, the designers we've spoken to just on the show in general. We've been doing the show for a while. Or if there's advice you would like to give if you don't feel like you have a problem.
My biggest problem right now is in terms of I have the whole game designed in my head and on like sort of an obscene amount of loose sheets of paper. Do you have any advice on converting that or getting past, like, this pseudo writer's block that makes it hard to transfer this fully designed thing into, like, human readable words?
Wow. Well, I think you should play this game I've heard of. It's called My Brain is a Stick of Butter.
But doctor.
I am a stick of butter.
So you've got it, like, physical spread out pieces of paper?
You have a clipboard just full of just loose sheets.
I mean, this is probably the thing you know but don't want to hear is you should transcribe those digitally first.
Yeah, but they're a little unhinged. Like, they're not rules text. They're almost stream of thought.
Yeah.
A lot of them. It's like, what if I did note? So the note cards, what if you could rip them sometimes? Wouldn't that be cool?
I'd love it if your actual note was so the note cards ..
sometimes it is.
I love a what if note when you're designing in, like, a notebook or and stuff. That's the best. It's like, what if note cards rip sometimes? How about that? Yeah, I feel like you're probably falling into, and this is, you can say fuck off if I'm making assumptions about your state of mind. I feel like you're probably falling into this thing where you want to copy all these loose notes into the computer, but you're editing them as you copy them. And I think probably the thing to do is just, like, make the big Google Doc of, like, these were all the handwritten things. And then once it's all digital, then you can play with digital so much easier than physical, I find. So that would be my I guess advice. But
the thing that always helps me with stuff like this is breaking things down into smaller chunks. And like the easiest way to do that, you know, converting physical to digital, is just be like, all right, what are the headlines, or like what are the section titles? And just sort of just like, you know, core rules, dice mechanic, note cards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because then all of a sudden you type out these 20 headers, right? And that all of a sudden you have much smaller bins that you have to fill.
Right. And today I just need to write how the dice work. And I actually already did this 5 years ago or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Good. And you did get me. I am a prolific edit as I write nightmare. So that remembering that and canceling it, it's good.
Yeah. I fall into that as well, where I will be working on something and I'll like get stuck on the same paragraph over and over again. It's like, listen, I think the honest to God truth is you don't really know if that section that you're stuck on is good until you finish the thing and see it in context of the whole. Like, what you're doing is actually, like, what I end up doing is worthless, because this may sound bad it on its own, but when you put it in context of the whole, it's like, oh, actually, this isn't as bad, or this needs to be changed in this different way.
Right. You don't know why it's bad. You know it's bad, like there's something wrong, but you won't know why it's bad until the whole paragraph is there.
That's probably the more succinct way of saying it, yeah. You don't know why. You know something's wrong, but it's not worth trying to figure out what it is until you have all the information in front of you. And be like, oh, it's because TK, you know?
Yeah, it's because TK.
Alternate advice, you just Pepe Silvia your wall with everything you've ever written about it, and don't take it down until you've finished the game, as like a form of sort of self-psychological punishment.
Right, that's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this this is an audio medium, but I'll just glance at
my oh, it's already
there's already post-it note wall.
Yeah, there's the beginnings of a Pepe Silvia wall for our listening audience.
Also, you know, this is Zine Month. You can get really abstract. Just scan all of those random sheets of paper and just then release that.
That's the 2E is my ramblings.
That's the 2E.
I have been considering putting the clipboard up as like a $200 if you got money to burn tier. You can buy my old raw notes.
That's great. That's the hey, throw money at me because you think this is cool. That's a fun one. Yeah.
One of those you can't imagine anybody doing it, but then somebody might, so you may as well.
This is a total departure, really. But the thing that I did that I have really liked that I've seen a few designers do in the recent past is they release the game, they also release a designer's commentary version of the game where they've like marked it up with notes. I know Sam Lee did this for Anamnesis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And every time I see that, I'm like, that's so cool. Like, it's like, you know, director's commentary on a DVD. I'm like, I wouldn't have ever thought to do this. Like, this would have never occurred to me that someone would want this. And every time I see it, I'm like, I have to read that. So this is me giving you an additional thing you can do once you figure out the thing that you haven't figured
more
out.
More work.
More writing to do. That's great. No, I do. I do really like that idea, though, because there's a lot. There's a lot going on with this game in a way that I'm like, in a rare fit, I'm allowing myself to have a lot going on with the game. I'm very often, and this is why, like, this project is very much a reaction to my murder mystery game that's coming later that is, I only bring up because it's like I'm doing a lot to simplify it and make it smooth, focus on you know, a nice smooth gameplay experience with no weird rules. And this one, I'm like, I like making the weird rules. Stop tearing them out of the game. So that makes it prime for designer's commentary, I think, because it's like, why did you do worker placement in the game? Did you need to? Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
It's awesome.
I didn't. Why are you questioning?
Oh, because it rules, actually. Yeah.
Is it a little harder to understand? Maybe. Figure it out.
The last question we always ask all of our guests on the show is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation for our audience. Normally, this is a recommendation of absolutely anything in the world, whether it be inside tabletop or outside. But since this is Zine Month, we'd ask you to give a recommendation of another Zine Month contributor or project that you've had your eye on that you think looks particularly cool or interesting.
I will say I got a chance to playtest A Perfect Rock, which is by Nick.
Yeah.
I want to say
Gralowicz.
Gralowicz. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Nick. And it was really cool. I really liked it. So check that out. It's like a world building slash role playing game about your going out into space looking for a new planet because yours got destroyed. And you're doing that by using sort of real rocks as prompts for what the planets look like. And then this whole other series of prompting that I think is really cool.
Folks listening to this podcast will remember Nick from last year, who was on our Zine Month series for Home, a Mech vs. Kaiju map-making TTRPG.
We love Nick, and they're probably either have just heard or about to hear an ad for a Perfect Rock that we're running on the show right now.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Consider, you know, you got the ad, and then you also have the personal stamp of approval. So go check it out.
Go check it out. Strong recommendation.
Thank you so much, Adam Bell, for coming to the table. Do you want to let our listeners know one more time where they can find you and where they can find Uneasy Lies the Head?
Yeah, you can find me at adambell.games on, that's a website, and it's also my Blue Sky, because that's how things work these days. You can go to adambell.itch.io if you want to download my games or get the links to the Kickstarter. Yeah, and if you want to playtest a different game I'm making, go to lockedroomgame.com and you can make a murder mystery. All the rules are there. It's fun.
Midnight Muscadines is a cozy, dark tabletop role-playing game where light and shadow intertwine in a fractured world. Players take on the roles of Marmiteers, brave adventurers who journey into the untamed wilderness to collect the elusive Midnight Muscadines, craft magical jams, and protect the fragile light of Nim. Through collaborative storytelling and resourceful gameplay, players weave tales of courage, community, and the pursuit of balance. Will you preserve the light, uncover the truths hidden in the shadows, or reshape the balance of the world forever? Midnight Muscadines is perfect for fans of Studio Ghibli and Sea of Stars, who seek to capture the magic of exploration and the heartfelt adventure in a world where small heroes make a big impact. Play Midnight Muscadines as a traditional GM'd game, GM-less, or even solo. Midnight Muscadines is crowdfunding now on BackerKit. Join the campaign at pandeongames.com/muscadines.
I'm Quinns of tabletop role-playing game review show Quinns Quest, and this is Play to Find Out. Play to Find Out is an actual play podcast that brings notorious old games from the 80s and 90s back to the table. Each season of Play to Find Out, I'm joined by Emily Johnson and Rob Morgan.
Good? Nervous?
Yeah.
You both looked at each other really concerned, like you think what's about to happen is going to be unpleasant. And frankly, I think that's rude. And together, we explore the TTRPGs of ages gone by. Our goal? To separate the TTRPGs that deserve to be remembered from those that maybe don't.
Can I?
I don't know, Emily. It was the 80s. A lot of people were on cocaine. We blow the dust from decrepit systems to learn how they work.
Your 100 on the encounter table bursts out. Right, you've encountered a bug. Get ready. Don't laugh.
How does one get ready for a fog?
Don't laugh.
Encounter their unique quirks.
I do finger guns to cover up how I wince.
A weird thing happens as you do finger guns.
Oh, no.
And I'm hoping that the Quinns Quest community will join us in exploring these games too. If you this up, cannot describe to you how much your adventure ends here.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because the best way to learn is to play to find out. Play to Find Out is available now on the Quinns Quest Patreon, but the first episode of each series streams for free on the Quinns Quest YouTube channel and wherever you get your podcasts. Anyway, you failed the Earth Tech roll, and you made jokes while I was doing my exposition, so you don't get to hear any more.
No. Come on.
I was shook.
Hello, and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today, we are talking with Aaron Lim about his two zine month projects,
two?
Ithaca in the Cards and What Should We Have Tomorrow. Aaron Lim, welcome to the show. It is so good to have you.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm sorry, two? You're sneaking two things on this show? What do you think you're doing?
What do you think you're doing, my guy?
It's a lot of twos. They're both second editions as well. They're both
second
stats at these games.
Yeah, so Aaron, could you just start by giving us the two elevator pitches for these games?
Yeah, sure. So Ithaca in the Cards is a blackjack-driven story game about a group of doomed travelers on a perilous journey home, inspired by the Odyssey. And what I realized pretty recently, it's not really inspired by the Odyssey, but Odyssey, ODY-C, that was a sci-fi take on the Odyssey that Matt Fraction and Christian Ward did back in 2015, I think. So that kind of like weird psychedelic vibe was something that I wanted to get the vibe through with the new cover art, as well as like just the possibility that, you know, this isn't just a game about, you know, recreating the Odyssey, but like any sort of like perilous journey home. So you can reframe it in like a few different settings as well. And the other game, What Should We Have Tomorrow, is a solo journaling game about managing your pantry and like cooking a week's worth of meals for your loved ones. So that's also a second edition. Like I've had it up on PDF and very limited like physical copies here in Malaysia and for some friends. And then I'm going to do a proper physical release of that one.
Amazing. So two games like right in the same genre, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, the only commonality between them really is that they are second editions of things, which is why I thought, like, you know, doing both of them for Zine Month wouldn't be too onerous, because most of the design development work had been done. It's just a bunch of like updates. I mean the other thing as well is that like I was thinking of doing a solo mode for Ithaca in the Cards as well. So originally the I wasn't going to do like a full second edition of Ithaca in the Cards. I was just going to, I probably will just add a solo mode to this. Add a few tables, just make it work solo, because it is pretty workable solo, I think. And then that became like a full-on rework of the whole game, to the point where I think I will have to make the solo mode a stretch goal, because the base game has changed so much, and then I haven't had enough time to really like rework the solo rules and playtest them as much as I would like. So very, very funnily, like the impetus for like bundling these one of the impetuses for bundling the two games together might end up not happening until later. That's planning for you.
Yeah. It always balloons. And what's your favorite thing? Never survives first contact.
Oh, a plan never survives first contact with the enemy.
The enemy being crowdfunding.
The enemy being crowdfunding. Yeah,
the enemy of all designers, of course.
Scope creep is the enemy of all designers.
Yeah, actually,
and I
yes.
see the inklings of scope creep happening with you right now.
So let's dig into the mechanics, and maybe we'll just take these in turn. Ithaca in the Cards. What is sort of the central mechanic of that game? What does the play experience of Ithaca in the Cards look like?
So I mentioned that it is like blackjack driven, right? So that's the other commonality between the two games. You see, I'm like refining the Kickstarter pitch as well now, like as we are talking. So both of these are like very card driven games, right? So they are both focused on like standard deck of cards, and Ithaca in the Cards is kind of like based loosely on blackjack. It's there's a lot of changes to it, especially in the second edition. I've like messed around with the deck a bit to make the math work out better. One of the big changes was like when doing the playtesting for Ithaca in the Cards first edition, it was realizing that there's a chance, not always, but there is a chance that the game ends too quickly, because you can just blackjack really quickly, right? If you play with the full deck of cards. So what I did was I messed around with the math and like pulled out like the aces, all the face cards, and now like I pulled out all the nines and tens as well. So you're playing with a limited deck, and you're kind of playing blackjack, except that you only start with one card, and you're playing against the dealer, who's Fate in this scenario, and then Fate you know, presents challenges to you as you're like traveling home. And every time you meet fate, you try to beat the current challenge, but your cards also add to a running total. And if you hit over 21, if you bust, then you're dead. You just die. Or are lost on the journey home. And if you hit 21 exactly, then you get home safe. That's kind of like the main two ways for the game to end. Most of the time, the game ends when either everyone busts and everyone dies, or everyone but one person busts. And I want it such that like it rarely happens where like someone hits 21 and like everyone that's still alive gets home safe. So I had to mess around with the card deck to get the game length that I wanted. But that's kind of like the main thing of it. It's just like blackjack is just a really convenient shorthand so that people just remember that like 21 and over is no good. And then while you are doing that, you also have like parts of your character. So like each character is made up of your archetype, your aims, and your assets. And if you lose your archetype and your aim, then you also die. And you only have like you have a few chances because you have your assets that act like a bit of a shield. So you can lose three things before you're dead as well. And so the little trick that the game plays is that fate cheats, right? So fate doesn't bust on 21. So if you somehow manage to survive and like keep losing parts of yourself without busting, fate will just keep going higher and higher. You can go to 30, 40. And if you are ever lower than fate, you lose parts of yourself, right? So you will either die to fate cheating you or to you overexerting yourself and like busting.
I love a punishing card mechanic. I feel like that's something I don't think I've encountered in TTRPGs. Like you hear about like punishing like OSR games and stuff like that, but this feels like a very like punishing card mechanic, which feels very Odyssey. Like it's like this is an onerous journey that you're going on.
It really well simulates the idea of like the like million to one odds type of thing of like making it back home. Because the second fate gets above 21, you have to hit exactly 21 to like, you know, at a certain point, you've got to hit the exact thing you need. And that's a fun way to like, you're always looking for exactly what you need, not just something close to what you need. I need exactly a five here.
Or you hope everyone else dies. Then you can be the only one who makes it home safe. And then you carry all their cards with you and bury them back home if you can. That's another way that fate cheats as well. I said I remove nines and tens from the deck. That's only for you. You don't get nines and tens. Fate does.
It sounds like a real casino experience.
Like I said, like I had to mess with the math a little bit to make the experience feel right. Like I there was a specific experience that I wanted to get at, which is it is difficult. You know, like the pitch is you're doomed travelers on a perilous journey home. It's like you don't really expect to all get home safe. So I want that feeling to come through, but also not that you just die within like the first two turns. So there was a little bit of like balancing to make sure that like you play, you know, 3 to 4 turns, you feel like you get something out of it before you die.
I'm curious, like, and maybe this is like a practical thing to pull out for people, like how much playtesting did you do to kind of nail down, like narrow in on that feel and that math that you needed to tweak?
To be honest, not that much. A lot of it was just running simulations on like the math, right? And like actually like working, you know, putting up an Excel sheet. Okay, here's how many combinations that actually make 21 that are left in the deck, right? So getting that right didn't take a lot of like in-person, like full game playtesting. That one was just like making sure, you know, you do some math. But then obviously it is still really important to make sure that the feeling comes through. So for that one, I haven't actually done that much playtesting. Like it's been a few years since I say I haven't done that much playtesting, but like because I think Ithaca came out, the first version of it came out in like 2019. And so I've been playing it off and on, and like, you know, every time I like find like friction points, I've been taking note of those. So those count as playtests, I guess. Like, you know, even though I've like never intended at that time to like do a second edition, it's just like, you know, maybe if I ever revisit it. So it's a hard question to answer because, like, you know, playtesting is play is playtesting. So
of course, yeah. It reminds me of, we spoke with John Harper recently about Deep Cuts, the Blades in the Dark supplement, and John talked about like the almost a decade of playing Blades since it's been out is what like led to all of the supplemental materials that are in Deep Cuts. It's like play, like design by play. And it sounds like Ithaca is like in a very similar place where it's like the game's been out. You've played it yourself a lot. A bunch of people have played it. And now you're like, okay, how do we eliminate all those points? And then also sometimes game design is a lot of math. So that's also a good little piece of practical pull out.
And then pivoting over to what should we have tomorrow? Can we talk about the mechanics used in that game as well?
Yeah. So that one, so I rarely make solo games, very, very rarely make solo games. But that one felt right to be a solo game. So it's actually inspired by, I love like cooking and like cooking manga, especially. There's a series called What Did You Have Yesterday? That I really love, about like one person in a couple does most of the cooking for them, and like he's a very particular person, so he's like very particular about like, you know, balancing the budget and like making sure that, you know, you get a good meal under the budget as well. And ever since like the pandemic, like we've been doing a lot more cooking at home. Obviously, during the pandemic, there was no choice. But then after that, it's just, you know, I do love cooking myself as well. And just that experience of like, oh, I need to look at what's in the fridge. During the pandemic, we had to plan out like groceries a lot more than we used to. So What Should We Have Tomorrow is like based on that. And I also love card mechanics. So what I did with What Should We Have Tomorrow is, like, your pantry is just made up of all the, like, you come up with your own pantry based and tie each ingredient to a card in the deck, and then you use those cards to like arrange them into dishes. And then depending on like the prevailing mood of the day, so part of the game is also about imagining like a conversation with your partner or your loved ones, whoever it is you're cooking for, and like, you know, asking them, what do you want to eat, what do you feel like eating today, what's the weather like, what have we had recently, do we want to change things up a little bit, and then based on that put together the cards in your pantry into a meal. And then if you want to like score high, there's a bit of a scoring element to the game, so if you want to score high and like make your partner happy, you can make a big meal. But if you use too many cards, you have to use the cards as leftovers for the next day. They have to be in the next day's meal as well. Fictionally, you can play with it a little bit in that, like, you just have to use the same ingredients. You don't actually have to reuse the dish. Depends how much verisimilitude you want to have. You can cheat a little bit and just say you use elements. And that's all just about, like, oh, that's kind of like the experience of cooking at home, right? And I think cards, like just tying it very simply to cards in that way, is very simple. Like, there's a lot of things that you can do with cards. It kind of like makes you make your own prompt table, in that like you build out the pantry as you play, right? And then you go shopping by like drawing more cards from the deck. And the one mechanic that like I love, or like my wife loves, is that like if you hit your budget exactly, you get to draw one free card, because like that represents a free bonus that you get. You found a great, you did your budgeting so well, you found a great deal that you got exactly what you wanted and more when you went shopping.
Man, I can't wait to power game this solo game.
I'm gonna get so many freebies.
and that's been difficult to playtest. I don't make a lot of solo games. I'm not as familiar with like playtesting like practices for those. But the one thing that has been really fun was like I did a couple of demos of this game at like local events. Like, usually we don't play the full game. We just like, hey, here's some cards. Like, try and use that as a and come up with a recipe based on just like drawing random cards from the deck. And then people make little recipe cards that they draw on, and put little notes on them without prompting, right? It's just like, you know, they just come up with their own little flourishes for those. And it's like, oh, that's really nice. Like, I think people, like that it's a very familiar thing that people know what to do with. So that's been pretty cool.
It's always a great sign of a good game is when people start doing something that's not necessarily expected in the rules, but just they're like, oh yeah, I want to add to that. Like if someone is immediately adding to rules of stuff, it's like, that's great. That's so much fun. You're designing on the fly.
Yeah. So the one thing that I have noted, so weirdly enough, this game is kind of, I don't know whether I would say popular, but known in like Japanese role-playing circles. And what I have noticed is that the Japanese players tend to use this game for their characters from their campaigns. So they would use this game in between like campaign sessions to like, oh, this is what my character would be cooking, right? And like to spend more time with their OCs, to spend more time with their characters and like get more into like the characterization. So I've seen like a few game journals that are like that in like characters that like from like their Call of Cthulhu games. Which is also why I'm going to be working, hopefully, if we get the stretch goals and if it's if the crowdfunding succeeds, I'll work with Montro from Maelstrom to do another Japanese translation for the game.
Love that. So, Aaron, transitioning to kind of the details of this campaign, this two-game campaign, where are you funding? When are you funding? What can people get when they help support these games?
Yeah, so I'll be launching on Kickstarter, I think tentatively set at the 25th of February. So I'll be doing like digital and physical versions for both games. And there will be one sticker set that I'm going to provide with What Should We Have Tomorrow. I'm working with a local artist, Yon, who has already done these like cute vinyl sticker sets where you can customize your own kitchen and customize your own like apothecary. So we are going to do one set for What Should We Have Tomorrow that will just that will come with the game. And then hopefully we have very few stretch goals, which is just like we could do more sticker sets. And then also just for the Japanese translations for the PDF. And then probably if there's enough interest, we might see what we can do to get physical copies printed in Japanese as well.
With these second editions, do you have anybody like joining the team to help you bring these to print?
Yes, of course. So I will be. So I've already shared some of the work that Xiaoming has done for the cover for Ithaca and the Cuts second expedition.
Hell yeah!
So Xiaoming Tang is the artist who I'm working with for the cover, and he's also going to be working on the interior layout. He's a great like graphic designer, illustrator, artist from Malaysia. I'm also working for What Should We Have Tomorrow. I'm working with Thar Chandran to do the artwork for that, and that one's taking a little bit longer because she's actually doing it in like physical media, like she's actually like painting it like physically, which is very cool. And then, as I mentioned, Yon is going to be doing the stickers, and I'm also going to be working with Ella Lim that one. So she's a game designer artist who's done Lighthouse at the End of the Universe and Fox Curious Floating Bookshop. So I'm getting her help to do the layout for that for What Should We Have Tomorrow.
Aaron, as we move towards the close of this, we have a new segment that we're doing for this zine month that we are very confidently calling A for Advice. You know, last year we spoke to a bunch of designers for zine month. We've spoken to a bunch this year and in the interim months, a bunch of game designers throughout the tabletop community. And I'm curious if there is any problem or any difficulty that you're running into with your crowdfunding campaigns that we could maybe help talk through or shed some light on, or if you have any advice for people who are going through Zine Month for the first time that you'd like to share.
Yeah, I think the main like advice that I have and the thing that has helped me a lot is just talking with other people and asking for help. There's a lot of people who know like small things here and there about how to do things and like especially how things have changed. Right. From year to year, there's been a lot of like changes in like the crowdfunding landscape and in the industry and like with you know, things happening with shipping, and like I probably won't be able to ship directly to the EU for this campaign, just because I, as a single person running the campaign, I haven't taken the time to look into what the new GSPR regulations are for the EU, and I'm not confident that I can get on top of that in time for the campaign, right? Like, maybe down the line, 3 months down the line, when there's like more guidance available on that, I might be able to do it. But I know, and I've been seeing other people that have been talking through it and that have been sharing advice and resources on how to deal with this sort of things like tariffs and shipping issues and customs issues. Some of it is a little bit hidden in like a bit more industry focused or like Discord groups or like group chats that you might need to. But like most of them are, they're not hidden on like purpose. It's just like they're a lot more focused groups. So they're not there for like general like playtesting or like general game design advice. It's just like, hey, can you like help me troubleshoot like, you know, shipping issues? if you want that kind of advice and like a Discord that like a lot of times talks about like taxes and customs, you can find that. It's just, you know, you might take a little bit of digging and like, but like people generally are willing to help. Like you just might have to find ones where like, oh, okay, like 80% of this is going to go over my head because like they're talking about stuff that makes a lot more sense for like, you know, more experienced retailers or like people who are like moving large volumes of things. But like people are friendly and like willing to share resources and help. So ask for help. I think that's the best advice that I can share.
That is a great part of this community, is that it is so helpful. Like everyone's just so excited to like lift up other designers. Like it's not competitive, it's so collaborative, and I really want to just underline that piece of advice. Just ask for help. So many people around, so many designers around you are really excited to help out.
Yeah, yeah. We love like playing games, right? Like we want to see the cool games like make it out there. And so, you know, a shot of like, you know, throwing money at a crowdfunding campaign, like that's the other way that we can help each other and like see all the cool stuff that we're all working on finally come out, right?
So Aaron, before we take it to our kind of final question, is there anything else that we missed about the campaigns or the games that you want to make sure we ask about or chat about?
I do also want to shout out, so since I did mention What Should We Have Tomorrow had like a pretty good response from like the Japanese community. So I want to make a big shout out to Mashu. I don't know their real name, but like they for free provided a Japanese translation of the game, like a Japanese fan translation. So Mashu, thank you so much. That was really, really great. So yeah, and for Montreux and Mickey, who are like gonna help out with hopefully help out with the translation for the new edition as well.
So Aaron, our final question that we ask all our guests is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our way of asking for a recommendation for our listeners. Normally on the show, this is a recommendation of anything around the world, but because it is Zine Month, we would ask that you recommend another Zine Month project or Zine Month creator that you think our listeners should check out.
So I am not 100% sure whether she's launching with this, but I had a chat with Ella Lim, who's my collaborator on the layout for What Should We Have Tomorrow. And she's, you know, she's been telling me about the project that she's been working on. And that sounds really cool. I don't know whether I should be the one saying it, because I don't know whether she will have it ready for Zine Month. But everything I've heard of it is like incredible. So look out for her, like follow her stuff. Yeah, like it sounds great.
It's a mysterious one. Yeah, keep your eyes peeled, everybody.
It's fresh on my mind because like she was just telling me about it. So no, I want to see that come out. Like, you know, we talk about like, hey, let's help each other. It's like, no, I want to see this, right? Like this is a selfish request. I want this so that I can have it. Y'all got to help me out once she announces it. I don't even know whether she has a name for the project yet. Like finalized, so.
Oh, I love this! I love this little secret. Well, we'll link Ella Lim for sure, and you can go follow her all the places so that you know when this mystery project.
Yeah, we will definitely. You know, we're going to shout it out as soon as I know more. Even, So sorry, I also did want to shout out one thing. I know I was supposed to bring it up earlier, but like I'll bring it up now. A huge shout out to the community at Playtest Zero. So we meet up every other week. So we talked about playtesting earlier. This community, we meet up every other week to playtest each other's games. And I've done a lot of like playtesting for Ithaca and the Cards through that. So huge shout out to them and everyone who's been doing that. It's been great. And it's always good to have a good, reliable group of people to like playtest and like talk design with.
Aaron, thank you so much for coming on the show. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online and also where they can find your games that you're going to be kickstarting?
You can find me online at Aaron Lime, ehronilime, .itch.io, and I'm aaronlime.bsky.social, the regular one on Blue Sky. And I'll be sharing the Kickstarter pre-launch page soon. I don't have the URL. I don't have a fancy URL for that. So just look out for that on Kickstarter. I'm also on Aaron Lim at Kickstarter. I don't know. I'll post on there. It's a long one because it's like Ithaca and the Cards and What Should We Have Tomorrow as the title. So look out for that. Yeah.
Well, don't worry. We'll put the links in the show notes below. So people can just check out the show notes. Click right there.
Thank you once again to Adam and Aaron for joining us at the table. Please go check out their projects in the show notes. And thank you for joining us for these Zine Month special episodes. It is always fun for us to be able to highlight zine creators every year, and we really hope that you have gotten something out of this series, or at least found a couple new games that you want to check out. We'll be back next week with a usual episode, and then we'll be back on our every 2 weeks release schedule, so keep an eye out for that, and thank you again for listening. Remember, if you want more gamey content from us, you can check out the Many-Sided newsletter, the Many-Sided Media Discord, or you can support this show on the Many-Sided Media Patreon, where you can get ad-free episodes, bonus roundtables, and a whole bunch of other cool stuff. So please check that out, patreon.com/manysidedmedia. Rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.